Don't worry about making mistakes at all. We only get together like this a few times a year. I'm only down here once a month. People only have time to get together on Saturdays. And we try our best. That's all. We just try our best. And we laugh at ourselves. And we cry together, too. It's okay. Totally okay. So I apologize for my poor practice. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Yeah, like the baseball players. It is what it is.
There are no mistakes.
Yeah. So, you know, there are rough starts, there are fast starts. Has anybody ever flown U.S. Air?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the story that I used to get on U.S. Air was that the pilots used to be Navy pilots who landed on aircraft carriers and took off from aircraft carriers. So my experience was when I flew with U.S. Air, it was a fast descent, and it was a quick rise. Yeah. And sometimes when you're sitting there going up, you know, we have long, hectic lives. Hopefully we have long, hectic lives. then we get here, and we have 45 minutes to glue everything together. It can't be done. And of course, everybody's dragging where we came from to the space, including me. But you know, now we're here. We've landed. Taxi to the place where you get off the plane, and we walked into the Zendo. We made a Zendo, and we're making it sitting together. So I'm very grateful to you, as I said last night, for this and for this opportunity, which is very special, because it's a great, it's a sort of a, it's like riches or a luxury to actually be able to come together and create space like this. So let's do the best we can as we're here, cultivating gentleness and kindness. Cultivating love for ourselves and being aware of the entire space and of one another, respecting one another's space, helping one another to be gentle and kind to one another. That's all. It's the loving kindness is like, sounds like the easiest thing to do. After all, you know, it's not the Prajnaparamita literature. It's not a Zen koan. It's not Maha Ati. It's just loving kindness. So, I thought I'd read from, we'll see how far we get, One of my favorite stories in this book, called The Book of Serenity, The Book of Equanimity, translated this version from the Chinese by Thomas Cleary, 100 Zen Dialogues. And this one happens to be the 98th of the 100. I've shared it with a few of you, maybe. It's called Dong Shan's Always Close. Dong Shan is an important person to know about, if you're so inclined. He's easily Googleable. The Soto School of Zen bears the Dong of his name. There's another fellow named Cao Shan, who appears in this story as well, and used to be the Cao Dong school in China, Cao Dong, and it became Soto in Japan. It's what Dogen brought from China. So you'll hear a bunch of Chinese names that may not make much sense to you, but don't worry. I won't tell you the history of each person, but I'll place them in a context. Jiu Feng, cutting off his tongue, made a sequel to Shi Shuang. Cao Shan, cutting off his head, didn't turn away from Dong Shan. The ancient sayings were so subtle. Where is the technique to help people? So largely, this is a lineage. These are teachers. These are students. It's a tradition of people over generations working and practicing together. Praxis, like what we are doing together. Don't worry, Ji Feng did not lop off his tongue. Cao Shan didn't cut off his head. Although, sometimes we feel like, I know I feel like this, they want my head. And I don't want to give it. And then I go through the wormhole and like my head is released. And I'm loving and kind and spacious and friendly. Ji Feng may have been very quick with his tongue. Maybe he had to stop talking to learn what he's really saying. Cao Shan's head full of stuff. With a head full of stuff, where's the technique to help people? So, a monk asked Dong Shan, among the three Buddha bodies, which one does not fall into any category? Dong Shan said, I am always close to this. Which one does not fall into any categories? I am always close to this. This has to do with a tongue and a head. This has to do with creating categories, defining things, controlling things, separating, moving away. Chaos at bay. It's time to do this. In the original record, the question is, among the three bodies, which one expounds the Dharma? Dong Shan said, I am always close to this. Always close to the Dharma. Always taking refuge in the Dharma. Immersing body and mind deeply in the way. Never far from all my ancient twisted karma, never far from the refuges, never far from the three pure precepts, never far from the 10 prohibitory precepts, constraining precepts, never far from the simple direct life. So Chan Master Su Shan Ren first asked Dong Shan, and this is a favorite quote of mine, please teach me a word which does not yet exist. Please teach me a word that does not yet exist. How are we going to speak from our heart? Genuine, authentic. How can we speak and be free of categories? Free of separation. Dong Shan said, no, no one would agree. Su Shan said, then can it be apprehended or not? Dong Shan said, can you approach it right now? Su Shan said, if not, still there's no way to avoid it. Dong Shan agreed with him. There's no way to avoid our life. There's no way to avoid our suffering. There's no way to avoid the prisons of our categories, the separation of our speaking. We have to enter them. We have to feel them. Push through a pinhole, opening up differently. Later, a monk asked Zhao Shan, what is the meaning of the late teacher saying, I am always close to this? Zhao Shan said, if you want my head, cut it off and take it. It's always amazing how violent our Zen tradition can be. You know, everybody gets upset about Nan Quan killing a cat. And here we have Zhao Shan offering his head. We're not quite offering his head. If you want it, take it. There is some historical precedent. I don't think it was Zhao Shan, but the emperor of China sent an emissary to a particular Zen master to ask him to come to court. And the Zen master said no. the emissary went back and told the emperor, and the emperor sent the emissary back. And it was pretty much, you know, it's either you come or I take your head. And the story goes that he said, take my head. Again, this is a story. I think emperors were often in the position where they took people's heads. I don't believe that's what this story is about. It's about what we're holding on to. It's about what we're not letting go of. It's about the creature at the far end of the dark passage, deep in the cave. Deep in the cave that is frightened and angry and fearful, frightened, fearful, but can't let go. I recommended to a couple of people that they watch a movie called, a Chinese movie called Journey to the West, which is loosely based on the Chinese novel from the 15th century, I think it was 15th century, it might be 16th century, novel called Monkey, Journey to the West. And it's about this goofy monk, not the novel, this is the movie. Who's a young guy, and he has a teacher whose instructions he's following, and the monk is in the business of helping people deal with evil spirits. And how he does this is he uses a book of nursery rhymes. And it's quite amusing because he's pretty clumsy and dorky, and he's quite idealistic. And he's at a village, and you know, there's this fish spirit that's angry in the river, and it's this huge thing. And he starts reading these nursery rhymes to it, and so on, and all these wild scenes happen. He's being dragged through the river, flung around, and all sorts of stuff happens. The village is being sort of torn apart by this big fish, and you know, children might be eaten, and all sorts of stuff going on, and. And then he fails. Well, he doesn't yet fail. So then this very attractive samurai-type woman shows up, who's, you know, just like totally sharp and totally terrific. And she beats the heck out of the spirit, kicks it in the jaw, and, you know, does everything right, throws it in a bag. And the village is saved. And the guy is realizing he's falling in love with this woman. But he's a monk. So he thinks he can't fall in love because he's a monk. And then he goes back to his master and tells him how he failed and so on and so forth. And then he sends him back out with his nursery rhymes to face the world. You know, another problematic thing happens. And she shows up and wins. But the funny thing is, she's falling in love with him. So here they are. He wants to be a monk. She wants to have a husband. And at some point, there's this really strange locomotive-type trolley car thing which has steam and pumping engines and so on, and all sorts of weird things happen. And more evil spirits come, and they work together to conquer those guys. And then there's another place where they go that's like this, something out of, you know, Central Asia. They go into this inn that basically is all all evil spirits, all human beings that evil spirits have invited into the inn, and they're the innkeepers, and then they, through their greed and gluttony, they take them over, and then they all turn into roasted pigs on spits. So the young guy figures it out, and he starts fighting with them to protect them, stop them, and the woman comes along again, and of course, but they're both together, they're successful. And she's more successful than he. Then he goes back to his master, and his master says, now you should go to the west. You should go to this mountain that's, you know, 10,000 feet high, and you'll know it because it looks like Buddha. So on his way west into no man's land in China, out in the edges of the Taklamakan Desert, he comes. He doesn't see the mountain, but he falls into this hole. It's like a cave underground, like he spelunked. He didn't spelunk in; he fell in. But it's something you might spelunk in, and it's all covered with lotus vines. He's down there, and this charming Chinese guy shows up, starts talking to him and trying to sweet talk him and confuse him a little bit, and then his story begins to unfold that he's been in this cave for 300 lifetimes. 300 lifetimes. Not as bad as the fox. But so he's in there, and he hasn't seen anybody. Nobody's fallen in, right? For a long time. Mm-hmm. And he tries to get this guy to help him get out. And he tries all these tricks. He turns into an attractive woman. He turns into a this, a that, other thing. He tries to sell him. And then he tells him his story about how he got confined here by the Buddha. And he can't get out, and so on and so forth. And the guy doesn't help him. He somehow climbs up out. But by mistake, the guy calls back up to him and says, you know, I haven't been able to see the moon for 300 lifetimes. This lotus blossom has been in the way. Would you kindly pick the lotus blossom and move it out of the way? And so he does. And somehow that sets off this chain of events where the spirit, the creature that's under the ground in this hole, is freed and is on top of the earth. And he's this monkey warrior. Totally, like, only after his own interest in good. Totally, like, just aggression and nasty stuff. And he won't let go. So the young man tries to fight him, like, do all his tricks with his nursery rhymes and things like this. And it doesn't work, and he's kicking the crap out of him. Throwing, you know, like he's flying all over the place. And then the woman shows up. And the woman starts doing battle with him. So I'm going to spoil the movie for you, because you're probably not going to watch it. So the monkey kills the woman. At this point, the monk realized that he loved the woman. And the story that he'd been having with his master about pure love and human love, the difference, was inconsequential in the face of love. But what happens to the guy as he suffers tremendously, and the other guy makes fun of him for his suffering, for his loss of this person that he loved. Instead of aggressively attacking him, he invokes Buddha, and he sits. And the monkey creature is attacking him and having no effect on him. Then all of a sudden, the monkey guy is like totally angry. He's like, there's this mountain that's 10,000 feet high that's Buddha. He crumbles it. He like just knocks it all apart. It comes crumbling down like an earthquake or dust in an atomic bomb or something. And then the next thing that happens is this Buddha appears in the sky. Huge. Like huger than anybody can imagine. And it arises out of the love of this monk. And that love defeats this monkey god, monkey king. And he crumbles. But he doesn't die. He's put back in the earth under mountains. That monkey guy is not far from me. We do battle every day. Because I've become acquainted with this guy, I can practice. And because I've become acquainted with this guy, I can meet people. And remarkably enough, everybody is my teacher. So, Jifeng, Shishuang, Dangshan, Saoshan, Suzuki Roshi, John Hai, Paula, Robin, Jeannie, Elaine, Tom, my teachers. So that's why I'm grateful. And like the Chinese monk in the story, I only have my nursery rhymes and love. That's all we need. There's some beautiful poems in 98. So, the monk asked Jung Ai, who said, "Wait, I'd rather bite off my tongue than violate the nation's taboo." The taboo is talking about not knowing like you do. The taboo is talking about not practicing. The monk also asked Jung Ai, who said, "What enmity is there between me and the late master?" Then Chan Master Boning Yang, his first commentary on this case goes, "This closeness is heartrending if you search outside. Why does ultimate familiarity seem like enmity? From beginning to end, the whole face has no color or shape." Categories. "Still, your head is asked for by Cao Shan. All these teachers, all this tradition, that monkey is our head." So then, of course, Wan Song has to add his little bit. Commentary on this poem. "This is good, all right, but it gets too far into the wind and smoke. Look. See in how many ways Tian Tong is thoroughgoing." This Tian Tong is an important guy as well. It's Tian Tong Hongzi, who's a very important teacher in the Soto world. So he says, and he gives verse commentary throughout. You know, our friend Chan Master Boning Yang is a guest appearance. "Not entering the world, not following conditions, in the emptiness of the pot of ages, there is a family tradition. Jifeng, Shishuang, Saoshan, Dongshan, Hongzi, Wansong, us. A family tradition. White duckweeds, breeze, gentle, evening on an autumn river. An ancient embankment. The boat returns. A single stretch of haze."
Of what?
Haze. So this is sort of like the family book. You know, getting the family Bible from my Aunt Dorothea that was passed on to her by her mother, that was passed on to her by her mother, like that, with all these names written in, people who had born, married, died. And there were stories about these people. And that's what this is. Where did we come from? Where are we going? How are we going to get there? On the love boat. But, you know, it's not all Mexican brass bands and bikinis and sunshine. So let's stumble along together for the rest of the day and tomorrow and Sunday morning. Let's forgive ourselves and forgive one another and help one another. And I noticed there were a set of votive candles in the Dokusan room up above on the shelf.
Oh.
It says R-E-L-A-X. So let's, you know, in the little time we have, if we actually can be with each breath, it's a big mountain. But as many breaths as we can be with, we can expand that time. We can forget categories, and we can enter the moment of our life and be nourished. So let's do that, okay? I think there's supposed to be like a... You need a nearer bell, John?
I'm ready.
Yeah, there should be something like a stop.
I'm going to see your hands in.
Yeah, I know. But I have to put my book away first.
Yeah, I'm ready for
it. Well, maybe I won't put my book away. I'll leave it there for Tamara to deal with.
Nothing's going to happen to us, though, if you don't put it away.
Yeah, we're okay. May our intention equally extend to every being and place. Getting up, and we're going to do three bows while we're saying this.
All directions,